So welcome everyone to the first meeting of Trinity Term 2023. And it's a great pleasure to have Rania Langalar back again, this time as a doctor, Dr. Rania Langalar. Since he last spoke to us, he's gained his PhD. And it was a very brilliant PhD by all accounts. So let me introduce Rania to those of you who weren't here before. Rania studied religious studies at the University of Leiden and received his MA in Central Asian Studies from the Humboldt University in Berlin. His dissertation focused on late medieval clan genealogies, Dungrab, and was written within the framework of the interdisciplinary comparative project, Visions of Community. At present, Rania is the main researcher in the FWF project, Buddhist Narratives and Tibetan Ethnogenesis, which focuses on the textual and social history of a widespread origin narrative of the Tibetans and its implications for the historical study of ethnicity and nationalism. His research interests include Tibetan kinship, social history, ethnography, and philology. Rania, over to you.
Yeah, thank you for the introduction and thanks for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here and to see familiar faces in the audience. So today, I guess I'll be taking the seminar into a slightly different direction again after the last few installments, which were more of a comparative bent and looked at like broader neighboring cultural contexts and also broader influences that may explain how treasure literature, as it is known in Tibet, came about. Today, we'll take a more focused look on specific treasure works within Tibet. So I want to take you past four stations chiefly. First, I'll briefly introduce some of the chief sources I'm working with and we'll be talking about and how they present themselves vis-a-vis sutra and other types of scripture. Then I'll show a few practical examples of how they cite and use sutra. Then there'll be a bit of a more abstract part where I'll look at some of the themes that may derive from sutra that influenced the origin story of the Tibetans. That's number three. And then finally, I'll be looking at some of the sutras that get mentioned repeatedly across these sources, yet that are not known to us anymore, and see to what degree these sources, these Buddhavachana sources that we no longer have access to, may have been involved in creating the mythology that we see across all these types of treasure literature associated with Tsongtsengampo. Due to technical problems, I'll be saying slide a lot, which will then cause Anna to move the slide. Anna, could you move ahead, please? So the sources that I'm looking at are chiefly these early second millennium treasure texts associated with Emperor Tsongtsengampo, ascribed to Tsongtsengampo. So chief amongst these are the Manikambum, as it is mostly known, and the Kachemka Kulma. These are two rather different works. So the Manikambum is not a work itself, a work in the narrow sense. It's a collection of various texts. And one of the chief texts in it is the Dorje Chenmo, the great history. So yeah, the Manikambum, and chief amongst in that collection in the Dorje Chenmo, so the great history. And the great history is basically a large collection of stories concerning Avalokiteshvara, and it chiefly focuses on Avalokiteshvara as such, whereas the Kachemka Kulma is more about Tsongtsengampo. It's also considered an emanation of Avalokiteshvara, but that's very much focused on Tibet, the Kakulma, whereas the Manikambum has a somewhat broader cosmological perspective. And also, chiefly on the side, we'll be looking at various other works, such as the Gelpo Kachem, which is a text in 35 chapters that has been recorded on microfilm by the Nepal German Manuscript Preservation Project, as well as some other texts recorded by them. And as you work on these sources, it turns out that you really cannot work on them individually so much, because all these texts seem to have at some point touched each other, influenced each other. So I've worked quite a bit on the Kachem-Kokulma, and there's an article forthcoming on the textual history of that work, where I look at the different extant manuscripts. And there, for instance, you see that the text, that there are citations that are affixed to it, for instance, and in other witnesses, you will find them embedded in the text. You will also find them embedded in the Maikambum. You'll find them embedded in, for instance, the Meu Namsum Ginamdar, in the historiography attributed to Nyangrel. And many of these texts share bits and pieces of text. So they're very much interrelated, and their textual histories have not been worked up thoroughly yet. And for the Kachem-Kokulma, I've tried to do that with the available manuscript material that we do have. With Manikambum, that has not yet been done, and it also seems to be a bit more difficult, because that text, as opposed to the Kachem-Kokulma, got block printed. And that seems to have muted a lot of the different manuscript witnesses that must have existed prior to the work being block printed. Yes. So these sources all are quite unequivocal about their reliance and agreement and based in sutra material and other scriptural sources. So we're talking sutra, tantra, dharani. One of the most conservative witnesses of the Kachem-Kokulma, so this is one that has hardly been used or looked at all in the literature, that commences with a homage to Amitayus and then Avalokiteshvara. And it says something along the lines of, like, the emanations of Avalokiteshvara are unimaginable, unfathomable. It's the first two or three lines. Then it goes on to say, like, how do we know this? And it then refers to, first of all, the Kachem-Kokulma itself. And this is also known. There it is. How do we know this? It's known from numerous sutras. Dode. So here, also notice the achum, with the little archaic spelling element there in the dode. We know it is known from numerous sutras, which are the word of the Tathagata, and from the testamentary document of King Chi Sunsem, emanation of Arya Avalokiteshvara. So this is a reference to the work itself, the Kachem-Kokulma. And this seems to be, the testamentary document seems to be the older name. So the name Kokulma came about only later, and it's not used in this witness of the text. Much about Avalokiteshvara then has also been related in the sutras Karanda Vyuha, the White Lotus, so this is the Sadharma Pundarika, the Chulung Natsopedo, the Pundarika, and the Namparupa Gyalpo Chempo, and so on, as well as in numerous tantras. And you can try to move the slide. Yes, good. Wonderful. Perfect. And the Manikambum also signals the large role of scripture. So its first subcollection, so it's made up of cycles. So like a subcollection is called the sutra cycle. So this is quite obvious that it rubs shoulders with sutra, dokor. And originally, if the indexes of this collection are any indication, the Dokor, the sutra cycle, seems to have been made up of this great history and two scriptures. So the two scriptures are the Karanda Vyuha Sutra and what is in Tibetan known as the Chaktung Chentung Gisung. So this is a Dharani text on the thousand-armed, thousand-eyed form of Avalokiteshvara. Now, not only that, the Lord Gichemo, the great history, it's made up of, I think, 36 chapters, and four of these explicitly use the word sutra or tantra. And like one chapter discusses a list of 21 sutras associated with Avalokiteshvara and cites or paraphrases from them, whereas yet another chapter just lists the places where these 21 sutras were spoken. So slide, please. So it's very clear that both the Kakulma and the Great History, so chiefly focus on the Great History again, are they're presented alongside scripture, but also as being inspired by scripture. And it's obviously a chief point, an important point as well, that the purported author, Sun Tsengkampo, is considered an emanation of Avalokiteshvara. So when you look at that citation from the Kakulma, for instance, is how we know this. We know it from the testament of the emperor, and we know it from sutras. This already kind of seems to weaken or soften the boundaries a little bit between what constitutes Buddha Vachana. For if Sun Tsengkampo is a bodhisattva, then his word can perhaps be considered to a large degree equal to a sutra. So it's actually interesting how it presents itself alongside a list of sutras. Slide, please. So now we'll be looking at some practical instances of where these sources actually cite and use scripture. So very interestingly, this conservative redaction of the Kakulma, it opens up with this Vairochana-associated fractal imagery from the Avatamsaka. So what I mean by this fractal imagery is you get this picture of a Buddha with worlds being created, and in these worlds, other worlds appear, and in these worlds, numerous manifestations appear, like a reverse, kind of like one of these Russian nested dolls. And this is best known from the Avatamsaka Sutra, and in fact, it explicitly references it. Slide, please. But the interesting thing is that here it does not center around Vairochana, even though it mentions the Avatamsaka Sutra, but it stars Avalokiteshvara. So this is a motive that we'll keep running into, where sources are being used and relied upon, yet their representation doesn't quite align with the canonical versions of these texts we know. So they become more heavily, to become Avalokiteshvarized, so to speak. Slide, please. Then the Great History also uses such imagery to describe Avalokiteshvara's activity. Yet interestingly, that passage goes a little bit further. So beyond worlds that are emanated, so are Tibet and Sun Tsengkampo and his wives. This passage has been translated by Capstein, and he rightly considered that a very interesting passage because it really ties Tibet into this larger Buddhist cosmology involving Buddhist deities in India and then Tibet. So it really moves away from seeing Tibet as this isolated place, but ties into this broader cosmology. Slide, please. The same thing is happens in this Gelpo Kacham, where again you get this, where Vairochana is again mentioned by name, yet the star is Avalokiteshvara. A slide. Then the Kakulma also adduces the Karandavyuha to help frame the origin stories of both Avalokiteshvara's engagement with Tibet and the Chogo Shakyamuni statue. So the way it does this is quite interesting. It's quite subtle, really. So it presents an episode where Avalokiteshvara is speaking to Amitabha. Amitabha dispatches Avalokiteshvara to go check up on Shakyamuni Buddha, because he realizes he is about to die, and he sends him off to ask him to please stay living. Yeah, so he travels to Shakyamuni. And then in the Kakulma, it inserts a passage where we find the Bodhisattva Sarva Nivarana Vishkambin expressing the desire to go see Avalokiteshvara and wondering about the qualities of Avalokiteshvara. And this is from the Karandavyuha Sutra, and the text says so as well. So here in the middle of this narrative, you get a reference from the Karandavyuha, and it's name dropped. And then the text goes on to say Tutetana at that very moment, and the story goes on. And Avalokiteshvara arrives, so now we're outside of the Karandavyuha. But the story goes on, and Avalokiteshvara then ends up being charged with Shakyamuni, by Shakyamuni, to go and tame Tibet. So Avalokiteshvara asks Shakyamuni, please stay, because you haven't been to Tibet yet, the Tibetans have not been tamed. You should stay. Your task is not complete yet. And the Buddha goes, that's on you. That'll be your job. That'll be your task to fulfill in the future. Then people also ask, so if Shakyamuni is to die, then who will tame the heretics? And all these types of worries that his followers have. And in response to that, also statues are commissioned. And this is the Jōjō, the Jōjō Shakyamuni statue. So here the Karana view is briefly inserted to give this entire narrative, to imbue it with the authority of Buddha Vachana. Slide, please. We also find Angulimala in the Dodogi Chenpo, in the Great History. So this story is quite well known. It's a famous Buddhist narrative that appears in various forms across a bunch of scripture. In Tibet, arguably, it's best known from the Sutra of the Wise and the Foolish, the Zhangling Lido. And there again, the story features Shakyamuni Buddha, who encounters a person who has been duped into murdering 1,000 people in order to attain rebirth among the Brahma gods. So this figure is misguided by his heretic teacher, and he killed a whole bunch of people to attain his goals. Then after he has murdered 999 people, he's about to kill his mother, the 1,000th person, to attain his goal. And it's at this point that Shakyamuni sends an emanated monk who distracts him. And Angulimala decides, I'll kill that monk, and goes after this emanated monk. But he can't get closer. And the monk speaks to Angulimala and tells him, you have been duped. You have been misguided. What you are doing is sinful. And upon hearing this, Angulimala realizes his mistake and becomes a follower of the Buddha and even attains enlightenment in the end of the story. Slide, please. The interesting thing now, again, in the Manikambum, the story of Angulimala is rather centered around Avalokiteshvara. So again, we find a scriptural precedent which gets presented in a different way, reframed around Avalokiteshvara. So here the story goes, O Mani Peme Hum. Next, the Bodhisattva, Lord of Compassion, Arya Avalokiteshvara, did as follows. Because a heretic with wrong views had told the short strongman Angulimala that he would become a Buddha if he murdered 1,000 people, he killed 999 people. When he was preparing to murder the one remaining person to be killed, the Lord of Compassion, Arya Avalokita, looked on with compassion. He emanated as a Sangaksambuddha and said to Angulimala, who was set to experience the suffering of coursing around in the 18 hell realms, O Mani Peme Hum. Thus, Angulimala's suffering from heat turned into well-being. And when the thought of the lion's strength arose in him, he attained unsurpassed enlightenment. This is the 31st chapter on Angulimala being taken out of hell. So here clearly the story gets revamped. Instead of Shakyamuni Buddha emanating a monk, we have Avalokiteshvara emanating a Buddha. And rather than a brief but dire sermon on the sinfulness of his actions, he simply uses the six-syllable mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the mantra of Avalokiteshvara in the Karandavyuha Sutra. And this source is eminently important, as we will see. A slide, please. Now, something similar happens in a quote from the Avalokiteshvara Namasa Shataka. This is the 108 names of Avalokiteshvara. This is also among the 21 scriptures that are repeatedly referenced in the Dologi Chemo and in other sources as well. So in this passage, you can click on the next slide already, Anna. Praising Avalokiteshvara by his 108 names promises a range of benefits. So here you can see one who does that will not be reborn in bad realms, you will not go to Avicii, a hell. Whoever gets up in the morning and reads it or has it read or recites it, his body will not contract leprosy, won't get lung disease. When you die, you'll be reborn in Sukhavati. You'll remember your births, and so on and so forth. A slide, please. And this very same passage is also cited in the Great History. So here, the yellow underlined text is very much what we read just now. There are some differences in the exact formulation, but it's clearly the same passage, and the source is mentioned as well. The Tsen Gyatsakyapit, also the Sutra of the 108 Names. You can move to the next slide. The interesting thing here, though, again, the benefits do not come from the 108 names, but from the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. Yeah, so once again, sutra is used, but it seems to be bent in the direction of the Manikambhum's chief aim, which is to promote the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum. It's not quite obvious to me to what degree there is conscious authorial intent behind all these changes, because many of these citations seem to have coursed from text to text, and there are obvious mistakes that enter, and they accrue transmissional errors. Sometimes citation particles turn into or get turned into paraphrases. So there are many. Yeah, it's very unclear whether this person sat down, had the sutra, changed it, or rather whether they had access to this citation from elsewhere. So for instance, interesting thing, this very citation also appears at the end of Guru Chöwang's Manikambhum Chenmo. And there too, it says, Om Mani Padme Hum. So it's clear that at least one of the two likely did not read the sutra, but they take the citation as they find it and use it. But it fits the larger project of the work. Slide, please. Now, many chapters of the Great History are straightforwardly based on passages from the Karandavyuha. So some examples, and this is not an exhaustive list, chapter 11 is the Bodhisattva Sarvanivarana Vishkambin and his quest for the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum, which is what the Karandavyuha is really at heart about, his quest for this mantra. Chapter 26 focuses on Avalokiteshvara, who in the form of a Brahmin visits a destitute, poor and suffering deva, asks him for food, and he says, I don't have anything, I can't give you anything. Avalokiteshvara, please go look in your house. And he enters to only to find his rooms overflowing with food and riches. And this then leads later on in the chapter into a praise of Avalokiteshvara. And chapter 27 is Avalokiteshvara saving 500 traders from a Rakshasi-infested island in the form of the horse king Balaha. Chapter 22 has Avalokiteshvara rain food from the sky to tame meat-eating beings in Magadha, in India. This is also from the Karandavyuha. And chapter 23 has Avalokiteshvara travel to Singala Island as a Brahmin boy and marry these Rakshasi women in order to tame them. Slide, please. Now let us now have a look, take it from a different tack, and look at some of the differences in the origin story of the Tibetans as we find it in the Great History. So there are two main classic sources for this origin narrative, which is quite well known. I'm sure all of you have heard of it, where the Tibetans supposedly descend from a monkey and a rock ghoul, like a Chakshinwa. Now the story appears in many permutations. Slide. But there are notable differences between the Kakulma and the Manikambhum. So the Kakulma, the conservative version, it does not use Om Mani Padme Hum at all, not a single time, not in all its pages. It doesn't use the mantra. it also has the monkey and demoness first have a single child, which then become four, and then eventually 400. And these branch off into four groups. And these are associated also with the four horns of Tibet, but also with the Nangi Myu Rikshi, so the four internal groups, so the ancestral clans of Tibet. So the number four pops up in the Kakulma. Also, in this early redaction of the Kakulma, the monkey is just a monkey. He's a bodhisattva monkey, but he's not Avalokiteshvara. In the Manikambhum, all of this changes. So the story immediately opens Om Mani Padme Hum. The offspring goes from one to six. And this seems to be a case where the demands of narrative symmetry change the content of the work. So six mirrors the six syllables of the six syllable mantra, obviously, but also the six realms of rebirth. And this is explicitly cited. So they get six children, they beget six children, and each one of them is reborn from a different realm in the universe. And it also mirrors the six perfections, which also appear in this version, in this version of the origin story in the Manikambhum. So here, narrative symmetry seems to change the number of offspring from four to six. And this also actually, interestingly, returns in the Tibetan flag. So the Tibetan flag has six sun rays. And the official symbolological explanation of that is that it represents the six original clans of Tibet. So if my reading here is correct, that in this very Karandavyuha infused setting, the narrative was again slightly changed, much in the way that we saw with the previous stories. The number of clans moved from four to six, in likely emulation of these Buddhist notions and Buddhist themes, the six syllable mantra, the six realms of rebirth, the six perfections. What also happens in the Manikambhum is that the monkey becomes equated with Avalokiteshvara. And this is yet another instance where you see texts perhaps influencing each other, because then in later redactions of the Kakulma, the monkey also becomes Avalokiteshvara, but originally he seems to have not been. Then it also inserts Buddhist sermons, which also picks up on this theme we find in sutras, where bodhisattvas engage with people they want to tame by through gifts, material gifts, and through gifts of dharma. This is also mentioned in this origin story, where Avalokiteshvara is charged with taming the Tibetans through material gifts and through gifts of dharma. But the latter is not really followed up on in the Kakulma, but it gets picked up on in the Manikambhum. And then you get a lot of Dharma content added to this chapter. Slide, please. And the interesting thing in these changes is that, so now in the Manikambhum, we actually find the Bodhisattva himself marrying a bloodthirsty Rakshasi. So the Rakshasi herself also becomes more bloodthirsty. So in the Kakulma, she is surely a violent and bloodthirsty being, but she threatens to commit suicide if the monkey does not pair with her, does not mate with her. So she says, you should mate with me, and if you don't, I will die right here, and I will die filled with hatred, and therefore I will surely be reborn in hell, and that will be on your conscience. Surely keeping your vows and doing your meditation thingy here, but that happening is worse than you just marrying me. And then he goes off and speaks to Avalokiteshvara and gets permission and marries her, and then they get children. But in the Manikambhum, it's the Bodhisattva himself, obviously, who now mates with the Rakshasi, the Sinmo. And so this is interesting. So some of these themes, they already seem to be present in the Kakulma, but I wonder, they certainly become more pronounced here. when you consider the fact that the Karandavyuha was so important in giving direction to all the narratives that we find in the Manikambu, the fact that here it is the Bodhisattva who marries a Rakshasi, that's an element you also find in the Karandavyuha, where he turns up, they want to marry him, and he does, he says, I will marry you if you will give up your, if you will abandon your bad ways, and they do. So he uses it as a means to civilize bloodthirsty beings. Yet another like nice little detail alongside the introduction of the six syllable mantra and the number six, and the Bodhisattva himself being the chief missionary agent of Avalokiteshvara. There's another interesting little overlap with the Karandavyuha, because that actually contains a chapter that we briefly discussed just now, where he introduces five types of agricultural produce. And this is also an element we find in these origin stories of the Tibetans. So I wonder whether some of these elements actually derive from Buddhist scripture. You can move the slide, Anna. Now I'll come to the final chief point, and I will be touching on some unknown scriptures. So the great history repeatedly invokes a set of 21 scriptures on Avalokiteshvara. I already mentioned this briefly before. But these are grouped into a set of 14, which are Avalokiteshvara-related dharanis, and a group of seven scriptures that are described as Tenzikitsen Töpe Yuntengido, so sutras on the benefits of hearing the name of Avalokiteshvara. The first that is listed of the set of 14 is the Chaktong Chentongizung, which is the text that was included in the sutra cycle of the Manikambun. The first text of the second set is the Karandavyuha, which was supposedly also included. So these are two important works. Some of the other names are rather mysterious and enigmatic. So there are a few that are quite easily identified, and some that I still have not been able to identify. They also use different names. This is not completely unknown, this is not unparalleled, that sutras have multiple names. But it, for instance, references one Tsenrap Yongsu Tempedo, so the sutra that thoroughly teaches the list of names. And I have never heard of this name before, and I couldn't find it anywhere either. But there is a citation, and that clarifies that this is in fact a reference to the Gandavyuha Sutra, which has a chapter that focuses on Avalokiteshvara. Got a slide, please. Yeah, so, and you can move to the next slide as well. So these seven include so the Karandavyuha and the Siddharma Pundarika and another Pundarika Sutra, probably the Karuna Pundarika, although the citation is hard to trace. No, but here I want to focus on two that are cited throughout much of this literature that have proven elusive to me anyway. Slide, please. So the first one is the Tsuluna Tsopedo. So this work is cited or at least mentioned in numerous early Tibetan works. So I've come across references to it in the Manikambum, in various redactions of the Kachem Kakulma, in different places and in different contexts, sometimes with citation, sometimes without. It's cited in the Mewen Namsung Ginamtar. It's cited in Nyangrel's, or the historiography attributed to Nyangrel. It pops up in these other Sungtsen Gampo testaments that have been recorded by the Nepal German Manuscript Preservation Project. So it seems to have been a rather well-known work. It packed some punch in the tradition. It was certainly quite well-known. But this, like some of these other sources, appears under a wide variety of titles, which makes it more difficult. So these include Chulung Natsopedo, Chulung spelled differently, chulung natsok do, chulung natsoki do, chulung natsok rupe do, chulung munpa rupe do. And then you get references where you clearly have the same setting, yet the name of the sutra changes. Then you suddenly, they talk about the chulung patsa chengi do. And that also appears in a variety of names, so chulung patse do, chulung patsa chengi do, and patsa chulung, for instance. And it was unclear to me in the beginning whether this actually refers to the same sutra, because the different context suggests different readings of that. But in the end, I think this letter is actually a different source. So we're dealing with the Chulung Natsok Pedo. You can move the slide if you would, Anna. Now there's one long citation in there, in the Manikambun, where the content of the citation maps quite well with the contents of a text that is preserved in the Kanjur twice, no less, called the Pakpa Chenrezig Wangchuke Yung Shecha Wesung. So the Dharani named the mother of Arya Avalokiteshvara. You can move the slide again, but there are some problems with this, because when you look at this sutra in the canon, there is no indication whatsoever why this should be called Chulung Natsok Pedo. That's one thing. Second of all, the citation is set in Vaishali, whereas the Manikambum in another chapter is quite clear about the setting of this Chulung Natsok Pedo, which is Mount Malaya. So this is a bit tricky. And then we find a second citation, which indeed seems to reflect a different text. We can move to the next slide. And the other citation is this one here, and that gives us an impression of the contents of this sutra, which was so widely referred to in this early literature. So at that time, the Bhagavat sat at the peak of Mount Malaya. A retinue of countless bodhisattvas as expansive as the ocean circumambulated him and then sat down. The Bhagavat began to speak on the great virtues of Avalokiteshvara. Quote, so this is now the Buddha speaking about Avalokiteshvara. The one known as Arya Avalokiteshvara is foremost among bodhisattvas in world realms equal in number to the world realms of the great Trikilyokosm, which are as numerous as grains of sand in the river Ganges. He emanates as 1,002 Buddhas and then works for the sake of sentient beings. Thus has been put forth in the Chulung Natsok Pedo. So here it cites a sutra that we no longer seem to have, where Avalokiteshvara features, so as the chief bodhisattva, even the emanational source of Buddhas. So we're very much along the lines of some of the strands we find in the Manikambum. Yet the source that we no longer know of, that does not seem to have been retained. You can move to the next text. And the second text that is mentioned often is the Nampa Rupa Do. So here again, it's cited in many works and it appears with different names. Here it's a bit worse. So we find Nangwa Rupa Do, Nampa Rupa Gelpo Chimbo, Ningje Chimpo Nampa Rupa Do, Ningje Rupa Nampa Gelwa Chimpo Do, and Do Ningje Chimpo Nampa Rupa. So some of these names sound like certain other sutras, but I have not been able to pin this down either. A slide. But here again, we get like a nice, very long citation from this source, which again gives us a view of the source material that the tradents behind the Manikambum, or behind the Lord Gyutsenmo in the Manikambum, seem to have had at their proposal. A quote, the Bhagavat sat in the grove of Prince Jetavana, together with numerous followers. At that point, magical emanations of Arya Avalokiteshvara were teaching Dharma in the six realms. Amazed at the Dharma Avalokiteshvara taught, the Bhagavan cracked a smile. Subsequently, many rays of light burst forth and disappeared in the crown of his head. And Ananda said the following to the Bhagavat. Why did you smile? And the Bhagavat replied, O son of good family, right now, the Bodhisattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, having created magical, miraculous displays, is thoroughly ripening sentient beings. Some emanations went to the Deva realm and are teaching Dharma there. Some emanations went to the Asura realm and are teaching Dharma. Some emanations went to the human realm and are teaching Dharma. First, this switches to the past tense. First, he thoroughly gathered them with material gifts, and then he completely ripened them with the Dharma. So here again, you get this element that you also find in the origin story of the Tibetans. But this happens in, this occurs in many sutras. It continues, some emanations went to the hell realm and are teaching Dharma. The flaming iron buildings were destroyed. The iron Shalmali trees toppled. The unfordable river of ashes calmed down. The trenches with red fire cooled down. The bronze scales broke and turned into ponds covered with flowers. Some emanations went to the Preta realm, and flows of ambrosia flowed from the 10 fingers of their hands. Rivers of divine ambrosia flowed from the 10 toes of their feet. Rivers of ambrosia flowed from all their pores. And thus they satiated all hungry ghosts, all pretas. Some emanations finally went to the animal realm and went inside the animal's ear canals and proclaimed, obeisance to the Buddhas, obeisance to the Dharma, obeisance to the Sangha, obeisance to Arya Avalokiteshvara. And by doing so, all these animals, after passing on, were reborn among devas and humans. So here we seem to have a sutra where, again, Avalokiteshvara is chief. His soteriological power is unparalleled. He travels to all realms. And interestingly, he is invoked alongside the Tri Ratna as well. So he stars now alongside the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha. And there is another citation from this text, which is more interesting even. Anna, could you move to the next slide? And that citation appears in the Gyalpo Kachem, in the Mewa Namsum Ginantar, and the Metum Nyingpo Chansichu. And it may occur in other sources as well. I would be somewhat surprised if it doesn't, but that's those are the ones I've come across. You can toggle the next slide. So in this passage, what happens is very interesting. So what we read just now is very much in the realm of a Buddhist sutra, as you might expect one to be translated from Sanskrit. But in this passage, so again cited from the same source, you can see in the lower fields, Tibet appears. So here again, we have this imagery of worlds being created. And towards the bottom here, it says, so in each Jambudvipa, so now we're already deep into the creation of the emanation of these various worlds. In each Jambudvipa, there was in the right text here, a barbarian world. This is a reference to Tibet. And in each of these, tererena, gelpo sungtsen reretan, chomo kamo tang memo reretu. So in each of these Tibets, emanated a king sungtsen gampo, king sungtsen, and his two wives. And after having emanated, they worked for the sake of beings. So here we, if we go by the citation, and we can get into the details of whether we can, because I'm not necessarily convinced that we can, but if we go by the citation, so here we then have a sutra that speaks about King Songtsen and his wives, and how they are emanations, or how Songtsen is an emanation of Avalokiteshvara in a sutra. And this text was cited widely. So, and this sutra, again, we don't have. So it's very interesting to see this passage and for it to contain some of the imagery that we associate with this early treasure literature, and it being attributed to a sutra. And it gets a little more interesting still. I actually came across a passage just this weekend while I was reading it, and this really feels familiar. Anna, could you move the slide? Namely, in the third chapter of the Lord Gichemo, we seem to find like a slightly inflated version of this very same narrative, but here it's not credited to a sutra. Now, this is standard fare, it seems to be, because many of the chapters, for instance, are styled after the Zhanglun Yido or the Karanda Vyuha, and they get changed a bit, as do some of the citations. But when you compare, so I've highlighted in coloring some of the shared elements in the upper row, the correspondences are relatively generic, although this Kuepa Parma Jigdengikam, where it's not quite so common. But especially when you look at the lower half, here again, you find in the text of the great history, again, this Jambudvipa, in each Jambudvipa, you get a Vajrasana, which appears in all the other citations as well. And to the north of these Vajrasanas, there is a barbaric country, a snowy land. Now here, the north of Vajrasana is retained in two of the citations, whereas the barbaric land is retained in the other citation. Then lower down, we find the line, Geoposonsen dang chomo karmo tang mumo rere tru. So again, we have this image of worlds being emanated. We get Jambudvipa, we get Vajrasana. To the north of Vajrasana, we get a barbaric country. And in this barbaric country, you get emanations of King Songtsen and his two wives. And then they work the wheel of beings. They work for the sake of beings. Now, Anna, could you move to the next slide? And some of the inserted material very much seems to fit the type of material that we find the great history inserting more often, namely material about partially derived from the Karanda Vyuha. So here it mentions the horse Balaha and 11-faced Avalokiteshvara. And in the lower portion, Mahakaruna and the emanation of numerous six-syllable mantras. So my hypothesis is that here in the third chapter of the Great History, in fact, we are looking at a piece of text that builds on a sutra that is no longer extant. And this is quite interesting because this passage has also been translated by Capstan, and he understandably called it an important innovation in the Manikambu, where Tibet gets folded into this broader Buddhist world. But if these citations retained in the Gyalpo Kachem and the Meru Namsungi Namtar are what we want to go by, this text seems to not have been an innovation, but have been taken straight from a sutra. Now, the fact that this sutra mentions Tibet and it mentions Songtsen may have been, but I'm purely, this is all purely speculative now, may have been a reason why later on the sutra was perhaps not considered authentic and not included in the canons, because it doesn't seem to have been included in the canons, and I cannot find it anywhere. So it seems to have gone. It seems to no longer be extant. But then these passages shed quite interesting light on the sources that the people behind the Manikambu still seem to have had at their disposal. Anna, could you move to the final slide? And we're coming to the end of the presentation. Just some conclusions then. It is quite obvious that Buddhist scripture inspired and in many instances even provided written material for this early treasure literature ascribed to Songtsen, the Kachem Kakulma, the Manikambu, and related texts. Slide. And very interestingly, there seem to have been sutras that are no longer extant that may have provided an important impetus to Tibet's Avalokiteshvara mythology. So these treasure texts, which we may see as innovative, maybe less innovative than previously believed, and may have banked on sutras maybe partly localized, maybe even indigenous creations, like who's to say. But texts that were believed to be genuine sutras that in part included very much the materials that we find in these early treasure sources. So that is all from my side. If you move to the last slide, it will be visually clear as well. Thanks for your attention.